Hello. Welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa, bringing you the News Gazette today, Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. Today on the front page, we have a large picture of some very happy graduates from high school, and the title is Twin Tassel Turnings, Graduation Night from Champaign Central and Centennial High School. And there are some happy grads who were given their degrees at the State Farm Center in Champaign. Hello, welcome to Illinois Radio Reader. This is Lisa bringing you the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, May 27th, 2026. Today on the front page, we have an article from the Champaign Schools with the title, Unit 4 Cracking Down on Residency Requirements. From Champaign by Jeff D'Alessio. Effort prompted by enrollment gap at high schools. Student registration for Champaign schools will involve a new twist this summer, an intensive review of whether families' listed address is their actual address, driving the change, the growing disparity in enrollment between the district's two high schools, Central, now 1,689 students strong, and Centennial, at 1,435, which board member Betsy Holder attributes to lax enforcement of Unit 4's residency requirements. District officials say there's no demographic data or high school boundary change to explain the enrollment gap between the two schools, or how in the span of 8 years, Centennial went from having 103 more students than Central to now housing 254 fewer freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. We have two situations going on in our district, Holder said on Tuesday. One, we have kids in Centennial's boundaries who are choosing Central, including a number using grandparents' addresses. The other, I would say, more significant problem, and this isn't just at the high school level, is that we have students who are not residents of Champaign coming to our district from Rantoul, Urbana, Danville, Villa Grove, really all over the place. Since sharing the district's May 22nd letter to families alerting them of the impending crackdown on residency via her board Facebook page, Holder has been inundated with feedback of all kinds, publicly and privately, from families concerned that their children will have to switch high schools midway through their stays to parents turning in violators, they say, are using bogus home addresses so that they can attend Central. There will be a more formal way to do the latter via Unit 4 Connect, described in the letter from the Acting Superintendent Dan Casillas as a community feedback and support platform accessible through champaignschools.org, where individuals can submit questions, concerns, and enrollment-related reports, as well as celebrations, positive feedback, and recommendations. The system is similar to ones many school districts have adopted. The letter went on to say, Holder suspects that sports are one of the primary reasons that some students within Centennial's boundaries have chosen Central instead. Another possible cause, the $102.7 million makeover the area's largest high school got, courtesy the 2016 taxpayer-funded referendum. Not a factor in the growing enrollment gap, Holder said, are the boundaries that determine which students are assigned to which high school. They were last updated in 2011, when Centennial had more students by fewer than 100. It wasn't until this decade that Central made its biggest year-over-year jumps, leading to the uneven current counts. From 2017 to 2026, Central's enrollment has grown by 407 students, Centennial's by 31. No matter the motivation, high school boundary enforcement will be closely monitored to ensure compliance with the Illinois High School Association residency and eligibility requirements, the letter to families noted, accurate enrollment and residency information are essential to maintaining fairness, eligibility, and integrity in all academic and extracurricular programs. Come fall, the lopsided enrollment counts will lead to Central being bumped up a rung come postseason time in volleyball, according to the IHSA's recently released classifications. While Centennial remains in Class 3A, Central will be part of a 4A, home to Lincolnshire Stevenson, 4,760 students, Chicago Lane Tech at 4,317, and the state's other largest high schools. Centennial dad Bob Schimmel brought up another difference during the public comment portion of Unit 4's last board meeting, holding what he said was a list of about 15 families living around my home whose students don't attend Centennial. Schimmel spoke of the challenge just having a full starting nine for a midweek high school basketball game. It becomes very frustrating as a parent when you're trying to field the baseball team on Wednesday, and we literally have 8 kids that are going to be able to go, with the 3 others on the roster tied up doing AP prep work, he said. This has been a continuing trend for 10 to 12 years, with nothing happening. If the schools are perceived to be unequal and on totally different spectrums, then that's a bigger problem. We're supposed to have fair, equal schools from staff, principals, coaches, band directors, all the way down the line. This isn't a Central Centennial thing. This is a fair and equitable thing for kids to be in the right seats so policymakers and administration can make the right choices on how we support the staff and fund our schools. It hasn't been announced publicly how specifically a district soon to be headed up by incoming Superintendent Giovanni Ponce will investigate whether families are being on the up and up with the home address that they register with. But it's a long time in coming, Holder said. Most school districts do pretty extensive residency checks, she said, and we have not. Continuing on the front page, another article about the Urbana Historic Preservation Commission by Jana Wiersema with the heading Landmark Designation Sought for Former Civic Center. MTD Director, it would effectively block agency's plans to turn the site into a bus transfer station. An application to designate the former Urbana Civic Center as a local landmark could jeopardize the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District hopes of building a bus transfer station at the site. Phyllis Winters-Williams, who submitted the request, told the News Gazette that she sees the need for the new transit facility, but also hopes to see the center preserved and potentially incorporated into the MTD's project. The Civic Center was the public square, a space for a community-wide art show with opportunities for private space within that public space for wedding receptions and baptisms, she wrote in her application. Since the closing of the New Year's 2018, there has been and still is no replacement in the Twin Cities for the opportunities afforded groups, large and small, at the Urbana Civic Center, she wrote. However, MTD Managing Director Carl Gannett said a landmark designation would effectively block the agency from using the site as we've envisioned it for a transfer facility. It's unlikely that we would be able to move forward with the partnership with the school district, which is what we've been doing. So District 116 would move their central office to this facility, he added. And if we are unable to clear the land for a building that accommodates transit, our needs and the school districts then would kill the partnership at that location. The News Gazette reached out to the Urbana School District for comment, but had yet to receive a response at the time of writing. The Urbana Civic Center opened in 1974. The building, which is located at 108 East Water Street, was designed by Smith Seton Olock Architects, according to Joseph Altshuler, assistant professor at the University of Illinois School of Architecture. The city closed the Civic Center in 2018. Diane Marlin, who was mayor at the time, said that the structure had deteriorated to the point where it would cost $750,000 to $1 million to repair. Additionally, the center's expenses exceeded its revenue by $40,000 to $50,000 on an annual basis, she said. The MTD has been looking to build a bus transfer station at the site, which is still owned by the city of Urbana, for over the last couple of years. We certainly wouldn't want to scrap the project, Gannett said, but leading up to the selecting this site, we feel like we have vetted most of the other available properties, so it could end up with us having to abandon the project because there aren't really any other appropriate properties available to us. Discussion arose on February over whether it would be possible to incorporate the Civic Center structure in part or in whole into the new bus transfer station, with the University of Illinois students presenting concepts as part of an academic assignment. Historic Preservation Commission member Dennis Roberts previously told city officials that the commission felt that the MTD had not considered the possibility of adaptive reuse of the site. We could have a plaza, Winters Williams said. We could make this actually the entrance. Remember, it was going to be the entrance to a bigger complex with three phases of a little bit of something for everybody originally. And, of course, then phase two never even got built. But I think it would be a perfectly appropriate entryway, some other use to go along with the transit center that they would want to build. However, Gannett said that keeping the building would impede the vehicle circulation, which is an important component of the proposed transfer station. Even if the building isn't landmarked and if it is removed so that we can construct a transfer facility, we have said from the beginning that we're very open to proceeding in a way that honors the history of the site, said MTD External Affairs Director Ashley McLaughlin. We want to do something that is sensitive to the surrounding architecture and to the history of the city and to the future of the city. Still, she likewise said that the Civic Center is not conducive to transfer center on that property. According to city staff, local landmarks are designated on the basis of historic or architectural significance. The individual who submits the application does not have to be the owner of the subject property. If the property owner, which in this unique case is the City of Urbana, consents to the landmark designation, the commission can make the final determination and approve the request if the site meets the landmark criteria. If the owner does not provide written consent, the commission will make a recommendation to City Council to approve or deny the landmark request, and the council will decide the case. A public hearing on the application is scheduled for June 3rd of 2026, McLaughlin wrote in a memo to the MTD Board of Trustees. If the Historic Preservation Commission votes in favor of landmark status, the issue will be advanced to the city as the owner of the property to be voted on by City Council. If a building is designated as a local historic landmark, any future exterior renovations that affect its architectural character would require a certificate of appropriateness from the Historic Preservation Commission, according to the city's zoning ordinance. If a demolition permit is sought for a landmark property, the commission must find that the demolition is limited to a non-significant portion or receive confirmation from the city's building official that demolition is necessary from a public safety standpoint. A landmark designation can be rescinded through the same process that it went through for approval. Among other things, Winter Williams' application cited the venue's importance to the civic life of the community and the building's integrity, which she feels has been maintained with no clear alterations since it was dedicated. She also noted that the Illinois State Historic Preservation Office found the site to be eligible for a listing on the National Register of Historic Places as an excellent example of architectural modernism and a locus of community events and culture. The MTD board will vote this afternoon on a resolution to commit a 20% local match in its application for a Federal Transit Administration grant for the bus transfer station project. The estimated cost for 2027 construction is $32 million. The Buses and Bus Facilities Grant Program allows funding requests for up to 80% of the total project cost, McLaughlin wrote. This puts the estimated local match at $6.4 million. If City Council votes against designating the former Civic Center as a landmark, the MTD would apply for the grant, McLaughlin wrote. On the other hand, if the council approves the designation or if the decision has yet to be made by the grant application deadline, the application would not be submitted. The MTD recently concluded a project review required by the National Environmental Policy Act, McLaughlin said. The process took place over the course of a couple years, with Gannett saying that the MTD could not begin to negotiate a sale with the city until the review was complete. If not for the landmark application, the MTD would finally be able to take that step, he said. Not only that, we could definitely apply for grant funds that would allow us to fund the project, he said. Winters Williams, who is a member of the Preservation and Conservation Association of Champaign County, said she submitted the landmark application as an individual, but the organization covered the application fee. Winters Williams served as PACA's representative during a Section 106 review of the project under the National Historic Preservation Act. She wrote in her findings that the need for a transfer station is tremendous. In downtown Urbana, bus riders must wait in the elements, barely sheltered by the parking deck or open benches on the west side of the courthouse, she said. The only amenity available is the porta potty on the south end of the parking deck. The lack of accommodations gives the impression of an unsafe space in the parking deck for those parking in those and those riding. The exposure demonstrates a lack of regard for the dignity of the bus rider. Our citizens do deserve better. However, she wrote that PACA's position is that the Civic Center should be repaired, remodeled, and reused as a transit hub. Winters Williams also feels that there are other sites that could also house the new facility if need be. There's a lot of other empty spaces in Urbana right now, and I felt like there was a chance here to really reimagine this part of Urbana instead of just building a brick building and tearing down something that we've already have, she said. And going forward to an article under our communities in Section A8, it's titled Pritzker Helps Break Ground for Accessibility Upgrades from the Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation Center by Luke Taylor. The Champaign-Urbana Special Centennial Park, the Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation Center is preparing for two construction projects aiming to increase accessibility and create a safe space for all kids to play together. Governor J.B. Pritzker stopped by the center on Tuesday in Centennial Park to partake in a ceremonial groundbreaking for the project alongside Champaign and Urbana governmental leaders, addressing the challenges that people with disabilities have and making sure that people of all abilities are able to play together in a common space, and particularly our children, may be one of the most important things that we can do. Bringing people together, Pritzker said. While this specific project serves the Champaign-Urbana community, it was funded in part by the Open Space Lands Acquisition and Development Grant Program, which provides funding to local government agencies to acquire or develop land to create public parks and other open spaces. Pritzker said that while the state was helping to foot the bill, he wanted to celebrate local officials who did the work to make this project happen. I'm very proud to live in a state where that matters, he said. You can go to a lot of other states. They're not focused on this at all, and they're not going to spend the money to help people who may have a disability to be part of the fun and enjoyment that comes with a park and recreation area. I live in a state that I think we should be proud of because we bring people together and allow them all to enjoy it together. Champaign Park District Executive Director Sarah Sanquist said the first project, a new drop-off lane, will begin in June with the intention of being finished by the start of the school year. The drop-off lane will mean that buses can actually come right up to the door of the center to allow individuals with disabilities to get inside. Currently, buses have to stop on Sangamon Drive, where traffic can get heavy during the end of the school day with Jefferson Middle and Centennial High Schools nearby. While the sidewalk leading to the front door is level and not terribly long, Sanquist said staff have to leave whatever they're doing to go and collect kids from the bus, disrupting their work more than necessary. the creation of this dedicated lane will allow that easier transfer of door-to-door drop-off for our participants and a safer opportunity for participants to come to CUSR and participate in activities there, she said. The second project, which aims to be complete by November, is a brand new playground that will be set out in back of the building. And there's a picture of Champaign Park District Executive Director Sarah Sanquist speaking with Governor J.B. Pritzker after a ceremonial groundbreaking on Tuesday for accessibility upgrades at the Champaign-Urbana Special Recreation Center in Champaign's Centennial Park. Let's now go to an opinion piece by J. Mark Powell in his Holy Cow History. The title is The Last Great American Snake Oil Salesman. Time was, if you had an ache or were ailing, some traveling medicine huckster promised his special elixir would fix you right up. Well into the 20th century, smooth-talking pitchmen would travel the country, selling tonics made of dubious ingredients, guaranteed to cure anything from acne to the effects of advanced age. Small towns and rural crossroads were their preferred venues. Sometimes they traveled with musicians, putting on a show to attract a crowd before bilking gullible customers out of their hard-earned dollars for concoctions that were little more than alcohol, often as strong as a belt of booze, infused with anything and everything from serious narcotics to ineffective herbs. Congress responded to the problem by passing the Food and Drug Act of 1906. For the first time, federal regulators had the authority to ensure that the medicines that Americans took were safe. When the FDA was established in 1930, the handwriting was on the wall for snake oil salesmen. The old traveling medicine shows and the products they promoted began going the way of kerosene lamps and Model T Fords. As their numbers dwindled, one stood out from the rest. Had a call. Dudley J. LeBlanc of tiny Erath, Louisiana, created it. In a state overflowing with colorful politicians, he was among the most flamboyant. He served in the legislature, first in the House and later in the Senate, on and off over nearly half a century. He ran for governor in 1932, losing to the legendary Huey P. Long. His unsuccessful candidacy did leave its mark. LeBlanc proposed paying a monthly stipend to seniors. Long appropriated the popular idea, and it wasn't long until Social Security was established. When it came to promoting Had a Call, LeBlanc had no equal. Introduced in 1943, it was a marketing triumph. LeBlanc may not have known much about medicine, but he sure knew how to move the merchandise. Time magazine called him a stem-winding salesman who knows every razzle-dazzle switch in the pitchman's trade. LeBlanc and medicine shared a checkered past. His Happy Day company sold Dixie Doo cough syrup and Happy Day headache powders until the FDA shut him down over safety concerns. Undeterred, LeBlanc turned to bottled medicines. Billed as a vitamin supplement, Had a Call was actually nothing but 12% alcohol, cleverly disguised on the label as a preservative. Time called it a murky brown liquid that tastes something like bilge water and smells worse. LeBlanc's high-octane tonic took the country by storm. Not surprisingly, it was especially popular in the South and the Heartland, where many dry counties banned alcohol sales. And he promoted his concoction with one of the greatest medicine shows of all time. The Had a Call caravan came to out-of-the-way communities. The admission price was simple, one Had a Call box top. It played in ballparks, on racetracks, high school football fields, any place that had bleachers. At times, the show drew as many as 12,000 people. LeBlanc packed them in with Hollywood A-listers on the bill, Ava Gardner and Mickey Rooney among them. Singer Hank Williams wrote his hit song Jambalaya after hearing Cajun troop members talking backstage. And the locals lapped it up. Over a 15-month stretch ending in March of 1951, LeBlanc sold $3.6 million worth of his potion, more than $46 million today. When he appeared on the popular You Bet Your Life TV show, host Groucho Marx asked what Hadacol was good for. "It was good for $5 million for me last year," LeBlanc quipped, but nobody was laughing when his empire imploded. LeBlanc sold his interest in the cash cow to eager investors for $8.2 million, more than $103 million in 2026. As soon as the papers were signed, the new owners discovered they were in big trouble. The legislator's business affairs were just as reliable as his medicine. Advertising costs were out of control. $2 million in bills were unpaid. The IRS wanted $656,000 it was owed, and there was another $2 million in accounts receivable. Hadacol's collapse was a national scandal. The Federal Trade Commission branded publicity surrounding the product false, misleading, and deceptive. Little wonder, then, when LeBlanc ran for governor a second time in 1952, his candidacy went down in flames. He gamely carried on, coming out with a final non-alcoholic patent medicine called Carry On. But the damage was done. Nobody bought it. Various owners later tried to revive the Hadacol brand name in the 1970s and 1980s, but they all flopped. Scandal is no stranger in the Bayou State. And it's not enough to bar a public figure from a place of honor. In 1993, more than 20 years after his death, LeBlanc was inducted into the Louisiana Political Museum and Hall of Fame. And there's a picture here with Louisiana legislator and Hadacol creator Dudley J. LeBlanc as he appears with Groucho Marx on an episode of You Bet Your Life that aired on February 28th of 1951. And there also is a picture of a box and bottles of Hadacol on display at a museum at Louisiana's R.C. Acadian Village in Lafayette, Louisiana. And still under communities, we have an article from Danville about the Danville Area Community College Board to consider terminations of adult education staffers, provost resignation, by Jennifer Bailey. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees is set to act on the firing of two employees and resignation of a third who have been accused of misappropriation of funds but have also garnered healthy public support at previous meetings. The agenda for the board's Thursday meeting includes consideration of the termination of Terry Goodwin, Dean of Adult Education and Literacy / Middle College / College Express, as well as Chantal Savage Bryant, Director of the Adult Education and Literacy Program. The board also will consider a resignation agreement and release of all claims for Carl Bridges, who serves as Provost and Vice President of Academic Affairs and Student Services. Bridges is resigning as part of a voluntary separation program, and his effective resignation date is May 31st of 2027. Also taking advantage of the program is Dawn Nasser, Director of Advertisement and Enrollment Services / International Student Liaison, whose effective resignation date is July 31st. Both are to receive $30,000 in payments with board approval. Recent DACC board meetings have had standing room only crowds on hand, with board members meeting in closed sessions to discuss employees under investigation for possible misappropriation of funds. It was after an employment hearing last month involving Goodwin and Bridges that DACC officials announced the state as investigating potential misappropriation of funds in its adult education department. And in our area, an article from Danville again about the Balloons Over Vermilion. Kennecuck ready to host its 10th edition. Balloons Over Vermilion has moved to an earlier summer date and new location at Kennecuck County Park and organizers couldn't be more excited for all the new and returning activities for 2026. It's all part of the 10th annual Hot Air Balloon event on June 5th and 6th. This year's theme is Above and Beyond. The 10th anniversary is a celebration of the community that has supported Balloons Over Vermilion from the beginning, said Dean Carlton, co-event chair. With new additions like the drone show and kite displays, we're excited to create even more unforgettable experiences for families and visitors. Carly Goodwin, event co-chair, said that the 35-member steering committee with 9-member board made up of community volunteers have been busy to make this year's event another fun time for family. And I'm going to take a break now with this half of the News Gazette and be back in shortly.